Hey there, welcome to SaaS Inbound Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer of buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business success. So today with me is Julia, VP of Marketing at Parloa, a conversational AI platform for customer service, but also the founder of the Women of SaaS community that I'd really love to highlight and support here today. And I hope we get to discuss it. So welcome.
Thank you so much. Really great that I can be here, Anna. I've been following your podcast for a long time. I also love female hosted podcasts. So amazing to be here. I'm also a fan of SaaS Group. So ready to go. And we will absolutely get to the Women of SaaS part, beside, yes, of course, product marketing and marketing for SaaS companies.
Perfect. I love the plan. So before we get there, let's maybe discuss you and how you got to do what you're doing.
Sounds really good. So my name is Julie. As you already mentioned, I'm the VP marketing at Parloa right now, and I've been in SaaS for a very, very long time. Over a decade. I think I'm nearing my 12th or 13th year. I can't even remember. So I've been working in different sizes of SaaS companies for the last decade. I started off in Berlin-based scale-ups, but I also worked for large American software companies. And now I have worked for this AI company, Parloa, for the last 2.5 years and ready to roll and continue the journey. However, I also had a life, or let's say a career before SaaS, believe it or not. So for 5 years before that, I worked more on the cultural and political sector. So that means I also did marketing and conferences, but more for the European Commission. I worked at the Austrian Cultural Forum in New York. So a completely different life. But then, let's say 10 years ago, I decided to pivot. That was my first pivot ever, and said, I want to look into the future, focus on tech. And yeah, decided to then join my first SaaS company back in the days, WebTrack, a Berlin-based analytics company.
All right. That's a pretty cool experience. And I feel like, you know, being in politics might be a cool advantage when you work in enterprise sales.
Very, very smart observation. Absolutely. It helps because you know how to deal with large institutions, mm-hmm, that have a more traditional mindset. And it's sometimes a similar way of speaking to the end customer. So absolutely. I think it has helped me quite a lot. And this is also why I'm thriving and love the enterprise marketing part specifically, because we will talk about that in a second. But it is so different to do B2C marketing or even SMB marketing rather than enterprise marketing. And this is my specialty and I love it.
Awesome. But yeah, obviously, let's get to it. Like, I would love to discuss, you know, kind of the differences between marketing for enterprise and marketing for smaller companies, for startups. But you know what was interesting? Like, I started to research because I wanted to come prepared. And I started to research, like, what do people say on the internet? Like, how is it different? And some of the things were making great sense. Like, for example, like narrower target audience and longer sales cycles. But at some point, I stumbled upon a blog post where it said, it's more about inbound marketing for enterprise SaaS. And I started thinking, and to be honest, I would always assume that it's more outbound for enterprise marketing. And here I was like, okay, then maybe I have some kind of misunderstanding of what you guys are doing. But yeah, walk me through it and tell me, like, how much of should I trust that blog post, or maybe my observation has been correct all this time.
The good thing is neither is wrong. So it really depends on what it is that you do and also how established the category is that you're in already. Because inbound can work if it's a very clear pain that people have, they know they have it and they might search for it. That means with SEO, you can already do a lot because people are actively searching for it. Intent is super high and that means you will also be found. So if you do a really, really good job in terms of content marketing and SEO, then they might be coming to you. I'm giving some examples, let's say project management, maybe for a specific segment. People know they need it. It's out there. And this is why you need to do a good job also in making sure that your SEO is up to speed and that you are also then found. However, there's other fields and categories, and I'm saying also especially in AI now, that people do not even know it exists at all. Maybe new categories. You know, for instance, what Parloa does is we provide AI agents for customer service. And that has not been something that has been around for a long time. So people might not know what exactly the pain is, what they're looking for, what's even possible. So that means we first need to educate and also create this new category for people to then, or for this intent and the proactive search to then pick up. So for us right now, also for other companies I've worked, outbound is a very important channel. So we work in marketing extremely closely with our BDR team. And then, of course, also channels like events are really important. Third-party events where you go to industry trade shows, you know that your audience is there. You pay for being in front of many new eyes, specifically in your industry. And this is the more outbound way of doing it. However, of course, you cannot ignore the inbound part either, because you need to build up a proper structure for when it becomes more of a household category, then you also need to be searchable and findable, of course. At the same time, and I want to caveat that a bit, it's not just necessarily about saying, what are AI agents for great customer service, but also building real trust around that and doing thought leadership content. And this is also how it's different from, let's say, B2C or sometimes even B2B marketing. You need to go really deep because you need and want to build trust. It's really complex, especially when you talk to larger companies. There's many different buyers, and there's a big responsibility in buying a software for a large company. It means it can, in theory, get you fired. You know, no one got fired for booking or buying IBM. And this is why they really also need along the customer journey all these trust points that you then deliver with the content that you provide, which is different from, let's say, just buying a software or some product for $5 a month, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So you mentioned already that, you know, you're working on SEO, and then you have your sales team, and events are a great source of customer acquisition for you. But how did you figure it out? Like, how do younger companies would determine their ICP and kind of find where they hang out to know that, okay, we can do what Parloa does, for example, we can do the events? And because it, like, events, for example, is such a arguable topic, I think. Some people come here on the podcast and say, oh my God, we spent like so much money on the booth the other time we did a conference and it just did nothing. People would come over and be interested in a way, but it was such like a top of the funnel and we never had any deals from there. But some people say, hey, you know what, this is our bread and butter. So how did you find out like where your customers hang out and where you should go?
Maybe starting with the first part of the question, the ICP. I think especially in the beginning, you have to figure things out along the journey. You know, it's a journey. You have to figure things out along the way because you don't have that much data that you can say, oh, these are the perfect segment. They need to fulfill criteria A, B, C, D. However, as soon as you have a bunch of customers or prospects, definitely look at the pattern. What do they have in common? And what do the most successful customers have in common, especially? And then focus on these. Because you know what we tend to do in the very beginning? Leave it all open, do everything at once. But if you have something that you can focus on, try to focus on this and run with it for a while to see, can you prove it or disprove it? So I think this is really, really important in the beginning. At the same time, still being open, because you might not have found that product market fit or that right ICP. And even for us, you know, the ICP is changing because as we grow also into even more enterprise and larger enterprises, we also need to adjust the criteria. But look at the deals that you have in the system, try to find these patterns and then act accordingly. And what we, of course, do as well, you talk to your customers and prospects and ask them, where do you go? They ask you, hey, are you also going to be there for conference ABCD and so on? And you also get forwarded newsletters from them. And this is also in a qualitative way how you find out where they, let's say, hang out. And when it comes to the event topic, definitely something to be discussed, because events are A, super expensive, and B, not scalable. Yeah. So that's the tricky part about them. However, and this is at least the secret recipe for us, if you go in extremely well prepared with your BDR team and sales and marketing and the other sales teams work together extremely closely, then you can make it a success. And this is really how we do it. We meticulously prepare. We have a very clear strategy, a very clear goal, and we act accordingly. So the outreach up front and the preparation and the pre-booked meetings that we have or try to have is a lot. So all the preparation goes in first. So we really get an ROI out of these events. And if you go in like this, then and not just show up the day off, then you will also at least increase the chances that it's going to be a successful event for you by many X's. And one other thing, you know, the cool thing about events is also that you can show your brand. And we have not talked about brand, but especially in the sea of vendors nowadays. And I'm not even, you know, this whole new AI era is bringing even more, flooding the market even more. You need to have and build a unique brand to stand out. And what better way to show your brand than by presenting it in person and then also building the strong relationships. And that is why for us, events are crucial because we care a lot about the brand and have a very unique one. And building the trust with the enterprise buyer, you mainly can do in the personal relationships. And one thing to add, I firmly believe if it's possible for your product in show and tell, that means really asking people, okay, what is it that your pain point is? And then showing your product and making it really tangible for them, ideally customized to them. And that is also a lot easier, not only possible, but a lot easier when you're there at the trade show as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you guys going to OMR?
We are not, because this is not yet our target group. There it's, of course, it's also a huge one where you have thousands of people, but also there, you know, you need to prepare and look really in a targeted way. If you know that 70,000 people are going to be there, even more do you need to put work into the preparation. Something that's important for us, for instance, we just had it a couple of weeks ago. It's called CCW. It's the Customer Service and Customer Experience Trade Show. It's a couple thousand, I think 8,000 people in 2-3 days. So it's a bit more niche than, it's not niche, it's large, but compared to marketing, of course. And also here, go in very, very focused, and especially the alignment between the teams is crucial. And that is also what I hear very often. Oh, marketing and sales don't get along. They have different goals. This is what also was my mission when I started at Paloa. I'm not going to let this happen. We're not going to work in silos anymore. We're going to work together. It's, of course, a question of, you know, the personalities that you have there, but it's been working extremely well. And I've never seen teams so aligned as here. Because sometimes, you know, marketing comes up with a strategy or sales does or different target groups. If you don't talk about the same thing and about the same companies, then it becomes difficult.
Absolutely. 100% agree. Sales and marketing. I don't know, to be completely honest, sometimes I'm thinking like, how did we get divided in the first place? Because we're basically running the same process and working towards the same goal. But anyway, that's another topic. But the reason I asked about OMR, and OMR is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, marketing conferences in Europe, in Hamburg in May. Yeah. And I was just wondering if, you know, if you guys figured out how to work such a big crowd and how to stand out there and how to manage meetings as well, because like my experience at this kind of humongous events is that you do prepare and you do have meetings, but it's just such a huge area that, you know, you do a meeting in one place and you start running to that place from wherever you are, and by the time you reach that place, and maybe I'm just like geographically challenged and, you know, cannot do it too fast, but by the time I reach my meeting place, okay, half of the meeting is gone, and the person I'm meeting with, they're like, oh, but I have another one and it's on the other side, so, you know, walk with me or this is it. So it's so hard to navigate those big ones, but also stand out, because like the big brands are taking so much space and are taking people with, you know, all the bells and whistles and AI and whatnot. And you're kind of drawn there. But at the same time, I feel like, it is just the top of the funnel. It is just people kind of like,
but it's a beautiful segue into a very, very, another very important enterprise marketing topic. And that is partner marketing. You know, this is one of the key pillars I've always been pursuing. And this was also one of the reasons why I joined Parloa, because we believe in partners. We are run a partner first go-to-market strategy. And also here, of course, you might not have a huge booth as Adobe or Google, but if you do the right partner marketing and co-marketing activities, your brand will be associated with those. So you can have, of course, two types of partner marketing. You either do it with the more regional, but maybe very industry-specific partners that are key to, you know, be agile together and create more and generate more leads and demands. But then, of course, there's associating yourself and working closely with the large companies. Let's say PwC, KPMG, Microsoft, and making sure that you also level up your trust factor because people understand, okay, you work with them. This also shines a light on you, and you will then also get a completely different reputation if you present yourself there. So whenever also we run our events, and by the way, OMR, I said we're not going with our own booth, but we are present there through our partners. And that is also key. First of all, to level up your brand, that's one thing, but also to reach a new audience that you otherwise would not have. So that is something that whenever I run it in or plan another piece of marketing, is I'm first thinking, how can we integrate partners into that to take it to the next level?
Awesome. Could you maybe tell me a little bit more the way you work with partners at, let's say, this sure. particular event?
At this particular event, we joined our partner at their booth, and we also had a joint masterclass. So basically, they approached us, said, hey, we'd be really interested in having you. We want to make AI, agentic AI, also a topic of how we present ourselves. And then we did it together with them. There was another partner that we did a side event with. So they invited us. We were on a panel with them. And then we also attended the rest of the event and we were there with our own booth. So these are the ones that is led by the partner, and they invite us to be part of it and shape it. It can also be the other way around. We do a lot of, or if not most, webinars, for instance, with our partners. So I think just yesterday we had a webinar together with our partner Kinova and our customer Rivety. And then we, of course, try to together, and especially if a partner is customers involved, people are excited anyway, but we want to make sure how we are better together. We tap into Rivety's customer base, into Kinova's customers, the partner's customer base, and into our own, and then elevate it and get even more reach. That is just an easy way of doing it. I don't want to say easy because partner and including partners and partner marketing adds a layer of complexity. You have more stakeholders to take care of. You are not always of the same opinion. It's difficult to then talk about who gets which leads, who can reach out first. But for me, it is worth the effort. And this is what I'm saying. It's an easy way to get to new leads, but no, the way is actually not easy.
Oh, yeah. Partnerships are not easy. But, you know, mm-hmm. once you kind of get it right and you focus on the partners that you really want and stop thinking about the rest, I think that's when it clicks and that's when it starts working. But I want to come back to something that you said about, you know, AI and creating the category and kind of, you know, I feel like we've been talking about AI like it's a commodity already because everyone has it and everyone kind of assumes that every tool now will have AI capabilities. And that is something that we discussed previously here on the podcast with the founder, where the company that he runs never really, they did have machine learning, right? And that's also another topic of like different people having very different kind of understanding of what AI is. But they did have a lot of machine learning in the tool from the very beginning, but they never talked about it because, well, you know, who needs to know what's under the hood? They just want to solve the problem. But now they obviously added it's to their branding and to their messaging that it's AI powered and everything. And I was wondering, you know, how, you know, adding AI to the name of the company affect the way, you know, other companies approach it, or, you know, if there is more demand, or, you know, what they're doing with it. So, and what he said was very interesting. He said, well, yeah, it helps kind of like top of the funnel kind of generate a bit of a buzz, but because it's also an enterprise solution, people who are making the decision, they still want the problem solved, and they kind of just assume already that AI will be there because it's it's a very expensive solution and kind of has to be at this point. So I was wondering, like, if, and you've been AI driven from the very beginning, so maybe it's not even that relevant for you as a question, but still, what do you see, like, in terms of Parlo and, or maybe just as a trend in the market, like, does AI, like adding AI to the name of the company, actually adds any interest or any trust or anything at all from the customers?
And I don't know if you necessarily need to add AI to the company name specifically. And I still mm-hmm. believe that you always need to lead with the customer pain and the value prop. However, of course, you should also use the momentum. You know, currently, if something is a trend, and this is also something companies know, they need to innovate. And even on the C level, they understand they also need to make the stakeholders happy and need to make sure that they also are, you know, using cutting edge technology to reach their goals. So I think also for them, they understand AI is going to be the future and they need to also implement it in their companies to reach these goals. So it's going to be helpful to talk about it because we are the guides in this new AI era. And we also need to make sure that the companies, our customers understand this. That means you need to include it in your messaging. Do I believe it needs to be added to the company name? I don't think so. So you should make them understand the value proposition, what their pain points are, how you can solve it, but you should also talk about the technology behind it. Because especially with AI, you say it's a commodity, maybe people talk about it this way, but it's actually not. And especially when you talk about enterprises, they don't move as fast as maybe startups do that already automate everything. It's not the case, so you first need to make sure that they are educated about certain things. And that they also have this trust built around the whole topic. And talking about it from a technical, but then also a business perspective, what it can do to you, and this way talking about AI, rather than just adding it to your name, this really brings the value. Because companies are looking for this guidance. No one knows what is right and what is wrong and what tomorrow will bring. We're also on this journey together. But nevertheless, we as an AI company, we work with it every single day, and we're so at the forefront of things. Everything when it comes to technology, to legal, to organization, that of course we're going to also support and guide our customers along the way. And they're also looking for this. So what, in a nutshell, is what I'm saying, don't necessarily add it to your name, because in a couple years or maybe even months, it will be so commoditized as digital. And you also don't want to have digital in your name, you know, but also make sure to talk about it in your messaging, your value proposition, and in the content.
Yeah, that's great. I think, yeah, it's just I am largely in such a bubble with the founders who are innovating, who are adding AI to everything. And I saw this very interesting post on LinkedIn the other day, where somebody was talking about the fact that, yeah, we're all talking about AI and everything's AI and no one really uses Google anymore. And it's actually just like 2%. Of the, like, all the search queries that went to Perplexity and ChatGPT, but you know, Google is still growing, and it's such a misconception that, oh, everything went AI. So if you're in that bubble of founders who are saying, oh, but we now only talk to Perplexity, yeah, maybe it's good to look around sometimes. Maybe I should too.
Yeah, but even within large enterprises, you'd be surprised how many innovative people are there as well. And you know, often they are our champions. So they are the ones that say, hey, I want to do something with AI. I want to bring my company, my project, my team forward. They approach us, and this is, of course, then helpful for us to also enter the company because they are evangelizing the topic. And so, yes, it's our bubble, but then there's also pockets of innovation also in the large enterprises, and they drive change.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Another thing that I wanted to ask you about is account-based marketing. And again, I think last year it really was a buzzword. It was everywhere. Everyone wanted to figure it out and use it for their company. So maybe, you know, you just walk us through it as a marketer, what it is, first of all, and, you know, how to approach it. And if, you know, you think maybe enterprise sales immediately mean account-based marketing, or maybe not?
Great question. I love it because I have a very strong opinion on account-based marketing or okay. ABM. I actually like to call it ABE or ABS. It's definitely not just marketing because it's account-based engagement. Marketing can never, ever do it alone. If we say we want to do ABM and the rest of the team of the commercial org is not part of it, not going to work. I can tell you straight off the bat, not working. Because it is a real joint going after specific accounts. That's what it means. But also here, it's important to differentiate. You can have a very clear target list of accounts, and then you do marketing toward this, and this is already account-based marketing. So you can either do one-to-many account-based engagement, you can do one-to-few, think maybe 15, and you can do one-to-one account-based engagement for a large company that you want to go after. And you need to decide where you are in your journey and also how specific the product is that you're selling on what your customer or target group looks like. Typically, I'd say in the beginning, it makes sense to go broader. If you want to do it at all, get whatever 100 accounts and go after those specifically. Often it makes sense that they have something in common. I'm thinking either an industry or a specific pain point to make it really targeted. Otherwise, it's normal demand generation work. But the first and foremost, you need to sit down with your BDEs or your BDRs, with your sales team and also partnerships and understand, are we talking about the same accounts? And what do we do together to reach them? It's a real integrated campaign. And if we come up with things that the others then don't work on or are aligned on, then it's not working. And I really believe that the one to few and one to one is something you should do when you're very, very focused on that specific set and you don't need to do anything outside of that anymore. Especially as a young company, you need to still test certain things and you need to have a broader target group. So to me, this comes at the later stage of the development of a company. When you do it, it's tons of efforts that go into one very specific account, but often as a young company, you can't afford to just focus on that one. Because what if it doesn't work eventually? That means you don't have anything else in your pipeline. I have a really strong opinion on ABM because it's a big, big topic, a big buzzword, not just last year, but many years, absolutely. And you really need to be mindful about how much effort you want to put into this, especially as a young company. Because if you only focus, if you go in really, really deeply and focus on a tiny set of companies when it comes to account-based marketing, then you might, or even just one, you might ignore the opportunities around you. And that can, especially in the very beginning, when you're just building your pipeline and your deals, that cannot be, might not be the right approach. It depends, of course. If you have a very, very targeted group because you have such a specific product, it does make sense. Many, however, that have horizontal products and technology, then I would not recommend it straight away. But what I'm saying is that ABM really should be called ABE, account-based engagement, because it definitely is not just about marketing. Here, especially the alignment between the commercial teams, the BDR team, the sales team, and partnerships are extremely crucial. And you cannot win, one cannot win without the other. Because what you do is you decide on a joint target group together, and everyone adds their activity to it or adds their, make sure that they are being targeted by those respective groups. One example, if you go to a one-to-few approach, which could be maybe 15 accounts. You understand, okay, this is either a specific industry or a specific use case you're going after. And then you understand what each part really does, or which, what each party is bringing to the table. And that means that the message that the BDRs are sending through their outbound emails are exactly the same what people then find on the perhaps dedicated landing page. It also shows what the downloadable asset, for instance, says. And then when sales comes into play, that they're also tooting the same horn, as they say. And then the same goes with partners. Yes, we mentioned earlier, adding partners to these marketing activities is more complex because, of course, you need to manage even more stakeholders to make it work, but it's also helpful. They might have other contacts, maybe even more senior contacts at this enterprise, so it's extremely helpful. Tracking is difficult, especially when you go one-to-one or one-to-few, because you need to see what has really made a difference. So it is extremely high effort, definitely not a low touch activity. And you need to be very sure that these are the right accounts you want to do and not already or not still testing things. For that, I would either go with one to many or just much broader. But anyway, I think ideal state is that we all do account-based marketing or engagement at all times, and we have a joint target group and target accounts shared with the rest of the commercial organization. That is the ideal state.
It is, yeah, and 100% agree with you. And like one, if I can pitch in here a little bit, one of the things that we did when we started exploring account-based engagement is we did the interviews with all the founders that ever came, well, not all the founders, okay, there were thousands, right? But still, with quite a few of them who went through the process with us, who went through, you know, a few calls, who sold to us as well. And we started asking them where was misalignment, like what the sales team, well, M&A team in our case, was talking about and what, for example, I was talking about on social media, on the website. And we found a few things that were a bit confusing. They were causing questions, and we want, you know, the process to be so streamlined and so clear because, well, let's face it, acquisition is long and messy and stressful. So we want at least this pre-talking stage, kind of getting to know us, to be absolutely clear. And it helped, and we changed quite a bit. And I think it's a really, really great, like, kind of first point, like where to start.
Yeah. And the extra effort is worth it, you know, to align, because eventually it's about the end customer and they need to feel that smooth experience. Otherwise, it's decrease of trust in you.
Sounds Group is partnering with SoundsTalk USA, taking place May 13th to 14th in Austin, Texas. This is where heads-down SaaS founders and their teams move their business forward. As a partner, we have 30% discount available to share with our network. Use code SaaSGroup30 in all capital letters and see you there.
Yeah, absolutely. When, you know, when you read on the website that it's, I don't know, no lawyers are involved, and then you have to hire a lawyer, and you're like, huh, okay. Yeah. I wasn't expecting that. So yeah, that's a really, really good point. So one more question I want to ask you about enterprise marketing before we move on to Women of SaaS is what kind of, I mean, being in SaaS for over a decade, what do you see marketers like make, I'll rephrase that. Where do you see marketers make mistakes with enterprise marketing? What are the most common ones that you think are totally avoidable?
I think one really big one is that people think now I work for a B2B marketing team and now we need to be very boring. So B2B becomes boring to boring because they think, oh, it's so serious. We're talking to these serious people on the other side. But, you know, people are consumers every day in front of their computers, in front of their mobile phones at home. And you don't become a different person just because you go to work. And I think it's really, really important that nowadays the marketing that we run is also relatable and personable and stands out. and that you also need to build a brand to make that clear to the other side and to also make it fun. And I don't mean ridiculously fun, or if it needs to match your brand, and you still want to, of course, create trust. But at the same time, think about it in a way to also bring fun and brand love to your customers. And this, I feel, is very often still the case. Also, when writing content, it is sometimes very dry and very serious and orderly. But also here, people want to read digestible things. They also want the tonality to be engaging. And that is key to me. And that is also what my team understands. Be different, stand out, and put people at the center. This is what we always say. And yeah, that I find a common misconception about marketing in B2B, and especially toward enterprise.
Oh, amazing. I absolutely loved it. We had another founder here where we were talking about email marketing. And that's also something that she said. She was like, if you're doing it and it's part of your job, and you know, you have to talk to people every week, let's say, at least enjoy it, at least make it fun. And I totally back it up. I mean, that's why, you know, at SaaS Group, we have, you know, the memes, and we kind of make fun of each other on LinkedIn, because that's what we do in like day to day as well. And if you're joining us eventually as a founder, as a brand, then we want you to know that you'll be roasted a few times.
100%. 100%. Yeah. Creating brand love. But you, of course, need to also put work into that, and brand, maybe that's not a misconception. People think brand is just design, but it's much, much more.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed your thoughts on you know, marketing, enterprise marketing especially, but I really, really wanted to give some love to what you're doing with Women of SaaS. I'm also a member. So, and we started at SaaS Group, we also started all these initiatives this year, because when we looked at the exit gap, it's just incredible. Like, I mean, the numbers are mind-blowing. And yeah, I want to ask you, first of all, what inspired you to do that? And then obviously everything else that you're actually doing to, mm-hmm. you know, to bridge that gap.
Yes, happy to. So I founded Women of SaaS 2.5 years ago. And why did I do it? I had already been in SaaS for a decade, and I had not seen a lot of change when it comes to representation of women, especially in leadership, but not just. Overall, it's stuck with roughly 30% of women. And if you look at some numbers for female founders and also C-level, just 10%. And I'm like, oh my God, this can't be that we don't see any progress here. And I thought, let's do something about it. And then at first I thought, oh, let's start a podcast to get people more visibility, like you did. Kudos, because I did not manage. Oh, I know I had to buy the mic and the technology and so on. I never did, but I said, let's focus on what I can do best, bringing people together. And then I started the first event here in Berlin. That's the first hub that we founded. And then it was just a group of 10 people getting together. But then we made this a consistent networking event, and it became bigger and bigger by then, you know, expanding into different countries with these in-person events. Because the goal behind Women of SaaS is connecting women so they can pull each other up or on the side into influential positions by really making sure they understand who they are. So increasing visibility among each other, but also increasing visibility to the outside. And I deeply believe that personal relationships can do that. We are an open network in the sense of seniority. So junior people can go there, but also senior people, founder, managers, and also across the different functions. Because if you want to build a strong network, you need to have people in all different fields of a company. So you can, whenever you're in need or want to give something, you also know who to reach out to. And we have grown then from the Berlin base to many different cities, to Milan, to Munich, to Hamburg, to Paris, to London, to Amsterdam, and also recently to New York and San Francisco. So it has really been expanding and growing. There's so much traction because these women want to be connected. They're all experts in their field, and they want to hear and get input from the others that are in a similar position. And there's not a lot of spaces that provide this type of the possibility or a forum to really exchange and build the strong connections. So that is what we've been doing now. And me, together with a great team, of course, of local hub leads, as they're called, that are so driven and make it possible to bring these women together and create these strong connections so we can be more influential together.
That's amazing. That's a great goal. And just to your point of, you know, bringing people together and giving them like really a place to discuss and a sense of community, I feel you. Like, honestly, because we're also hosting our little networking events. And I feel like in SaaS, you know, there are so many conferences and like bigger gatherings, but people go there and they're like still running around trying to figure out who to talk to. You have to stand in line to get to try a certain tool or whatever. And they're still lacking that like proper connection. And that's why sometimes, like, I mean, we had situations where we had to drag people out of the restaurant because they were closing, but people could not leave because they still wanted to be there and talk and discuss. Like, they were really craving that. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, just in general, SaaS founders are like that, women being so misrepresented, I think there is a huge demand.
Mm-hmm. We see that absolutely growing and growing. And I thought, you know, for Europe, it's maybe a bit different because that was my assumption. In Europe, we might not be as used to networking, and that is why it might be a bit different. And there's maybe even more need to build something more from the ground up. But I see it in New York and San Francisco. People and women especially are craving these in-person connections to connect with peers and like-minded experts. And that's amazing.
Okay, so tell me what worked for you in order to create a community? Because let's face it, a community was another buzzword for a while, and there were a lot of communities popping up, but a lot of them died. And it's not like you can just say on LinkedIn, hey, you know, that's a community. How did you make it work? What was the secret sauce?
For me, and that is also speaks to how I do marketing in general, I think openness and hashtag better together, that using that as a principle has worked for me the best. And this is also what made the network grow so much. And we now have thousands of members in different cities and regions around the world. And what I did, I made sure that those that are also driven are the women that wanted to become part of it and drive it in their own respective region. I gave them the opportunity to do it. You know, these are all entrepreneurs because they do things on the side. Normally, they are in a SaaS company and they run this on the side as their own little enterprise, let's say. And what I gave them the opportunity and didn't just say, oh, let's protect the brand. It's just me doing it. But no, I opened it up, first of all, to these amazing women who are so engaged. And also, secondly, to many other networking partners that we work with really closely. So I talk to and work with and collaborate closely with all the other SaaS communities of Europe, let's say. There's SaaSiest. We work with them. We always are part of their program of the SaaSiest conferences. Same goes for artists, but also we love SaaS in the Benelux region, and also SaaSDoc Dublin. We're always part of their program as well. So making sure to find these strategic partners and then also get wider reach and then become part of their program and their satellite network. This has worked a lot, really, really well. And this is also the approach that we're going for.
That's amazing. Are you guys also represented as SaaSDoc Austin?
Not in Austin yet, because we only opened the US in the fall, mm-hmm. but getting there. So if you know someone, you know, I love to use my network, please introduce me.
Oh, absolutely. That would be amazing. I mean, you just got me an idea, to be honest, because I will be going there, and why not like organize something?
Absolutely.
Even something super low-key.
At the big SaaS conferences, we have these pop-ups, also mm-hmm. at Web Summit and others, where it's not necessarily a whole hub where you throughout the whole year, you have these regular events, but we know that lots of women are going to be for a specific conference. And then we have one get together to bring them together specifically, either for a coffee, a drink, or a panel discussion.
Awesome. All right. That's a like a live pitch. I'll send it to Alex directly to make it happen. Awesome. All right. But what else do you see? Like, what are kind of like maybe the trends that you see in kind of trying to bridge that gap in tech and in SaaS specifically?
You mean the gender gap and yes. And female being better represented? Yeah, I think one of the big problems is there's not enough people in leadership. And while, of course, not everyone needs to be a manager, absolutely agree here, these are often role models that are necessary to also let the other women thrive and also make sure they understand they can grow. So first of all, not enough representation in leadership, but also people getting or women getting stuck in middle management. So what it is that we can do, and of course, this is a huge structural discussion, so we can't solve it all, but making sure, and this is what we're trying to do, to create role models, also by the interviews that we give and by the experts that we put on the panels, to have role models that are tangible, that are not, you know, one influencer that has 500 million followers, but someone who's really approachable and much, much closer to what you do in your day to day. I'm showing people that there's with female C-levels out there, and that you can be that too. So next week, we have our Berlin event here at SumUp, which is a fintech company here in Europe. And it's the chief product officer who will be speaking there. Or we also had an event at Recap where the CFO was talking. And I always ask them the question, how do you become a C-level? So the others understand, okay, it can be me too. So role models are definitely something important, but they need to be more realistic, let's say, more tangible and closer to what you yourself are doing to also make it more relatable and, yeah, also for you to be more motivated in your career choices. And something that we have in 2025 is our theme. It's called Bold Moves. So 2025 is the year of bold moves. And that means three different or can mean different things, but we look at it in three different dimensions. First of all, yes, you've built your network over the last couple of years. Also, you've been with Women of SaaS for a long time. You now have your network, but also be bold and use it. Don't be afraid to ask for favors, because that is something that we then don't really do. But then another one is also to look at how can I maybe make a career move? Is it now the time? Or many different other ways. I just said three, but it's now time to really take a step forward. The third one is actually public speaking. Many women don't feel comfortable speaking in public or maybe not even in front of groups. So your next bold move as a woman can be to put yourself more at the center, either within your company or maybe even put yourself out on the stage, because this also creates this visibility and then these role models that are out there. So yeah, lots of things still to do, but we try to make our dent in the universe by pushing this.
That's amazing. That's actually my goal for 2025 to work on my public speaking, and I'm starting to. And SaaS Talk Austin is going to be one of the first stages for me because I'm going to run the GTM track there. So, and that's why I'm so interested in maybe hosting something for you guys, because there are quite a few women involved there, and yeah, maybe we can do something
Amazing.
Together.
Amazing. Your bold move and our joint pop-up event. I love it.
Yeah, let's do this. Awesome. All right, just a couple more questions before we go. Usuals here. And it can be, you know, it can be something just related to your career, to Women of SaaS, to Parloa. What has been so far, you think, your biggest win and the biggest failure?
I think biggest win was definitely founding Women of SaaS, because I'm impacting so many people's lives with it. And that is extremely rewarding. I'm so, so happy to see women bond and network and help each other into new positions and help them out when they are in, when they have challenging situations. And the coolest story I had last year, when two women came up to me and said, Julie, we want to thank you for Women of SaaS or for founding it. We met at your event. And since then, we founded a SaaS company together. And, you know, this makes me extremely happy. This is why we do
That's
it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
What about failures? Anything? Learnings?
Failure all the time. I think this is a normal thing. And this is when I was thinking about the big failure, couldn't really think of one, because I fail so often. You know, you learn along the way so many times. But I think something that is maybe repeating and has led to some of the bigger failures is probably I think it's important to get lots of opinions to understand, you know, to get a good many perspectives on one situation or one challenge. However, sometimes it's also when it comes to hiring, I was listening to other people's opinion more than trusting my own. And that has also led to decisions I would not have otherwise taken and that eventually proved not right. That was the case for hiring, but also for some marketing decisions. And I think it's key to stick more to your own opinion, despite, of course, acknowledging that there's other perspectives out there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. And, you know, it's very interesting. I started to kind of reflect on that question while you were talking and remembered how I approached like this job because I was very new to SaaS, to M&A, to everything. And oh my God, thinking about failure was so stressful. But, you know, it's, I think this episode is 210, something like this. And every time I ask people, thank you, like, what's your biggest failure? And every founder says, oh my God, there's so many and it's so normal. And I'm like, I'm getting more and more kind of confidence about my own too, because, you know, if people who are out there building great companies, doing great stuff, approach it that way, maybe I should too. And hopefully, you know, somebody in the audience also found it helpful. But yeah, thanks so much for sharing your experience here. And the last question is always about hack. And it can be, again, anything, building a great engaged community, doing some marketing, managing so much, because that is also extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. So anything that worked for you and you're willing to share.
Yep, absolutely. And I hope you could also hear it throughout the podcast already. But my hack is better together. Because partnering up and aligning with others to create a better outcome, this has been working for me in so many different perspectives and ways. First of all, when running marketing, I told you, partner marketing to me has been a big, big success. More work, absolutely, we talked about it, more complexity, but you reach more people, you create more a higher reputation for your company, so better together works on this front. It also works in terms of alignment and working closely with sales and BDEs and the other commercial teams, because only then can you drive the results together that you need. But also on the Women of SaaS front, I said, you know, better together and working not against, but with other networks has also catapulted us forward. So I use this also in management. So working on problems together and not forcing my very specific opinion on someone. This has been my credo and I've been living it for a long time. And for me, this is my hack, not something like, oh, you should use Asana or Slack this way, but really my own personal principle.
Okay. And that's a good one. I love when it's, you know, just not a quick win maybe, but just a strategy that can bring you forward. So amazing. Thanks for sharing. All right. And, you know, thanks so much for your conversation. It's been great talking to you. I think, you know, your take on enterprise marketing is great. I love that you approach it with partners and the whole better together strategy. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. And obviously, you know, happy to support Women of SaaS in any way and see where you guys at in, you know, a year after all these bold moves.
Oh, very cool. It was a pleasure talking to you and reconnecting after meeting you in Paris at the SaaS conference, of course, recently, talking about Parloa, about marketing and Women of SaaS was really exciting. Thank you for having me.
Sure, anytime. And take care.
Bye.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.